Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we'll be hearing about a play currently running in North Hollywood. It's called Friends with Guns and examines not only gun issues, but really issues about relationships and communicating and listening. I recently spoke with director Randy Trabitz and playwright Stephanie Walker. Let's look at this line that I don't know if this is on the official page where I saw this exactly. Here's the line. You think you know your friends, your neighbors, your spouse, but what happens when you suddenly find out they have a garage full of guns? Now, after that line, I mean, how can we just describe this play just briefly before we get into the real meat of it?
Friends with Guns is a play about liberals and guns. It's a dark comedy. It's about two couples who meet each other and fall in love with each other. They're all parents and living the life of, you know, new parenthood with young kids and having careers and all of that. And the challenges with that. And these two women meet in a park and connect on a really kind of deep level where that's not something that happens all the time. And they feel seen and known by each other. And then their husbands meet at this dinner party and they end up really connecting too. So it's this thing that I think is very rare and hard, especially in a city like Los Angeles. The play is set in West LA. In Los Angeles, it's such a sprawling metropolis, and you know, everybody is in their cars and running around so much that it's so easy. And a lot of people don't have families here to back them up and drop the kids off with grandma, or, you know, at least that's my situation, that we don't have family living in Los Angeles. To help us with the kids. And so I think that's true for a lot of people. And it can be really isolating a lot of times. And for me as a mother, I've found such just relief in connecting with other moms in particular who, you know, really have become an important part of the community. And we help each other. We're there for each other. We get each other. We try not to judge each other. There's so much judgment in parenting. And I'm talking more about parenting than guns, but that's actually very true for the play because it's not just about guns. That's really the entry point. But I wanted to look at this issue from a female point of view and a liberal point of view. And because there are liberals, there are Democrats who are gun owners, and it's just not what we hear about very often. So that's the context for the play.
All right. Well, now you pointed something out, and that is it's not just about guns. I mean, this is Friends with Guns. This is the title. It's going to be running through May 4th in North Hollywood. We'll get the details on that after a while. But yes, it's a play about guns, but it is also about human beings. It's pointed out, and you mentioned that it's two young liberal couples. And so I'm curious why you make sure that that is the setting, that they're liberal couples. So Stephanie, if you could address that, but then
sure.
Randy, beyond the dialogue in the play, how is that explored or how is that presented that they are make sure to be seen as liberal couples?
The idea for the play came to me in a number of different ways. First and foremost is that I had friends who I was very surprised to discover were gun owners because I did not grow up around guns. In fact, I grew up with a big fear of guns and real hatred for guns. And if anybody was a gun owner or wanted to express why, you know, that point of view, I never wanted to listen. I just didn't want to hear it. I was incredibly naive and just thought it was a very, you know, like only right-wingers had guns because that's how naive I was about the issue. So when I found out that our friends who are liberals had guns, I was very surprised. And then I, you know, because I'm a playwright, I'm always looking at my reactions to things in the world and like, isn't that interesting that I was so surprised by this? Like, what is that saying about me and my perspective? And then I thought, well, this could be an idea for a play. The other thing is, as parents, like, you're told now in this day and age that it's important when you send your kid to a play date that you ask whether or not that family, if they're gun owners and how they store their guns. And I never have once even asked any other parents that question because it just felt too scary. And then what would I do with that information? So those things came together when, you know, our friend said, oh, we have guns. And then I was very surprised to hear that. But it kind of opened up my eyes to seeing like, wow, there's just a whole bunch of people who own guns that I never would have thought about. So I knew it was a play, but it wasn't when I was ready to write. And it wasn't until things just politically in our country got crazy after the Trump election I just felt like everyone's yelling and screaming at each other and nobody's listening. And it came to a head for me. And I started looking at myself then, like, where am I not listening in my life? And where am I unwilling to, you know, consider somebody else's point of view, as scary and as hard as that is, and not willing to want to give any, I didn't want to listen. And Randy, you gave me these words at one point, which I thought were so true, because not wanting to give a political inch that got in the way of even having a conversation. And I started, you know, realizing that nothing is going to move forward in our country if we don't start listening to each other. Because a conversation cannot progress without listening. It's a key component. There is no conversation if there's no listening.
Right, right.
And that's when I realized, like, okay, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, so to speak. And I've had this play idea, and this is an opportunity for me to challenge myself to see something from a different point of view. So it's important that both couples in the play are liberals, because that is the unexpected and also something that is true that we don't hear much about. And it's when you agree on everything else, except for this one thing that's incredibly divisive, what happens next?
Okay. Randy, so this is a four-person play, two couples, I guess?
Correct.
Okay, so it's talking about not only that they're liberal couples, young liberal couples, but also now within the play itself, it's about control and power dynamics within a marriage. But as Stephanie just said, it's about listening, too. So I'd love to hear about some of the dynamics of this play. Is it a spoiler alert to say that we find out that one of these people is a gun owner, or do they have a garage full of guns?
I think that's fair. I think that's the premise of the play. So we can say that one couple discovers the other couple are gun owners.
And so how is that presented? And you, as the director, give us a sense of the buildup. We heard about the folks meeting in the park, and then later there's a dinner party. These are friends at first, and then they realize this later. Let's get into the beginning.
The beginning is that one of the moms is alone in the park with her kids, and she's having a bad day. She's particularly frazzled, and she meets the other mom, and they hit it off. As Stephanie said, they bond first, and then they introduce their husbands. They kind of audition their husbands to see if they can get along.
Yep.
What I love about the play and what's been so extraordinary working with this cast is that it works all of these relationships on such a deep and well-crafted level. So as we've been in previews this week, listening to the audience respond, you can tell who's responding as a parent, who's responding as a married person, who's responding as someone who's there with their best friend of the same gender, and how important those relationships are. So we spent a lot of time in rehearsal building those relationships, you know, and successfully, I think, you know, we'll see how it plays. But I can say from my years of experience, this is one of the most bonded and passionate casts I've ever worked with. We had 2 days off and they were despondent being away from each other.
Oh,
I mean, they're really very, very intimate and connected. And so the heartbreak of seeing them deal with the issue and the potential of losing those relationships is poignant and is felt and is really what the play is about. I mean, going from the microcosm of an intimate relationship to the macrocosm of the country, which is what Stephanie is writing, it shows us very clearly that we've perhaps lost the ability to compromise because we're so much more concerned with winning. And we do that. We go through that action of trying to win without considering what the loss is. And the play shows us what's at risk.
Is there, what, arguments at the table? People are saying one thing and there's just no listening going on. Why argue with a pig? Is it at the dinner party that they suddenly find out that one or the other is a gun owner, or that there is that proverbial garage full of guns?
I don't want to give away exactly when it happens.
Okay.
But the action of the discovery works on many levels, and it filters through all the relationships, the male friends, the female friends, the couples, the marriages. And we see people dealing with betrayal and trying to win, trying to manipulate each other, trying to deal with the fact that they might have a different opinion from somebody that they had always been closely tied to, and what they're willing to sacrifice, which is more important, to hang on to the relationship or to do what you believe, ideally, is the right side of it. And it ripples through. I mean, I think we've all seen families breakup over political issues in the last few years. I mean, people stopped talking. Mm-hmm. Thanksgiving has become a nightmare for people because it's just a holiday of family togetherness and catching up, but you don't want to sit across the table from those people that disagree with you.
And yep.
All the things to avoid now have become bigger than the things to connect on.
Wow. We're speaking about Friends with Guns. It is. And it's this poignant truth. But that's what this is all about. And I really hate to say that this is a timely play. And I'm sad to be able to say that this is a timely play. Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Stephanie Walker and Randy Trabitz. We're speaking about Friends with Guns that's going to be playing in North Hollywood through May 4th. So more information on the play and the specific dates, where to go, how to get tickets. What is the best website for that, please?
Roadtheater.org. Okay. Theater with an R-E.
Yes, yes, indeed. All right, so we'll come back to the play in just a few moments, but just first a little bit about both of you. Randy, what's your background in theater? And how did you come to this show after that?
I'm a career director, and I'm a theater girl. I've dabbled in other medium, but I can't shake my passion for theater. It's always been there, like 6 years old, forcing my sisters to do puppet shows. I do a lot of new works with new writers, which I really enjoy because I love watching the script develop. And Stephanie and I were actually in arranged marriage through when the play was being workshopped at Inkwell Theater. And they were looking for a director, and somebody gave them my name, and they sent me the play. And I sat down, and I read the first page, and I didn't move until I got to the last page. And I said, sign me up. Wow. And always am nervous to meet a new writer, hoping that we hit it off. And we did. And we had a tremendous time, and I became determined to stick with this one because I feel very strongly about the play. And for me personally, I tend to do a lot of productions that are much more technical and a lot of multimedia and interactive stuff and huge casts, and people turn into monsters and goblins.
Oh,
and,
nice.
Yeah, I mean, I get the crazy stuff.
I want to work with you.
Yeah, please. So it was a deep dive for me into what is truly theatrical, which is real relationships and people talking to each other and crafting every moment. And it's been delicious.
You know, I've been very fortunate the last several theater folk that I've spoken to, either just on a personal level or for KVC Arts, they're really drawn to the intense. I've yet to meet somebody and talk with them much on the air about, yeah, I just want to do fluff.
Well, I don't want to do fluff, but I say quarter. This kind of proudly, and I don't know if you'll have to cut it, but I'm a whore for a joke.
Okay.
And I love comedy, and I love farce. I love to laugh, and I love to make people laugh. It's my greatest joy. So the fact that there's so much humor in this play thrills me.
You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. Also at kvcrnews.org. The sole focus of tonight's KVC Arts is a new play, Friends with Guns, currently running at the Road Theater in North Hollywood. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Stephanie Walker, playwright, and Randy Trabitz, director. Stephanie, a bit about your background. I'm going to ask about just a couple of plays specifically, but first I want to hear about how you even started in the playwriting world. This goes back about 20 years, you mentioned.
Yeah.
Sorry to say.
Time really flies. I decided when I was really young that I was going to be a writer. I think the real decision time for me came in high school. Like, I wanted to be a writer, but I wanted to be a poet and a short story writer. In college, I was a creative writing major and a Spanish major, and I was writing poetry and short stories, short fiction, and I had to write a play in high school, and I hated it. So I wasn't really a theater kid, though I tried. I auditioned for stuff. I just never got in high school. So fast forward, I was working for a theater company in Chicago, and that was kind of random how it came to pass. I ended up being an assistant, the executive assistant to the executive producer of a commercial theater production company, and they were doing Broadway shows, and they were renovating the Cadillac Palace Theater in Chicago and opening Elton John and Tim Rice's Aida before it went to Broadway. and doing a co-production with Steppenwolf, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Gary Sinise, and then it moved to Broadway. So it was a very fancy introduction to the world of theater.
You dove into the deep end.
It was kind of crazy that that was my first real job in theater.
Yeah.
And that it just was serendipitous how I ended up there. I was working in publishing before that. While I was there, I thought, well, I may as well try to write a play. I'm working in theater. And I took a playwriting class at Chicago Dramatists, and it was a dialogue workshop taught by the playwright Lisa Dillman, and she would bring in actors to read our stuff. So the first scene I ever wrote, I had, you know, Chicago actors come in and read it. I was hooked. I was never going back. It was a defining moment. That's how I started writing plays, and that was, 20 years ago.
And now, briefly, you're also the author of a book and blog, Love in the Time of Foreclosure. There is a short film by the same name. Is this connected to you?
No, that's just coincidence.
Okay.
Something else.
You want to give a quick summary of Love in the Time of Foreclosure?
Sure. Back in 2008, was it, when the whole financial crisis happened? Yes,
yep.
That's when it was. I was working just part-time at a theater company, and my husband was working, and he's a tech computer nerd guy.
Okay,
I don't know. Cool. It's too complicated to explain what he actually
does. It's cool bomb.
We owned a house. We had just done a big renovation on it and put all this money into the renovation, like used our savings for it. And then he got laid off. And so we both immediately started trying to hustle for new jobs. We put the house on the market right away because we were really scared. Like, what if we don't? I did not want to put the house on the market. That was my husband thinking.
This was Silver Lake. I mean, this
was not a
low rent area.
No. And we had incredible views, and it was a gorgeous house. And we thought for sure, like, these views will never depreciate. We can always sell the house. And, well, we couldn't, because then everything happened. Lehman Brothers happened not long after that. And then things just completely, very quickly, we were completely out of money, paying our mortgage, not having jobs. No one was hiring. I was working 3 part-time jobs, like temping and working at a theater company. It wasn't nearly enough to pay our mortgage. And then he got a new job, but also it was, again, for way less money. So we were very quickly facing foreclosure. And I was seeking out on the web, like, I wanted first-person accounts. This is what you do when you're facing this. Like, this is what you need to say to the bank. And these are the conversations you need to have. And these are the resources that can help you modify your loan. And that's what we were trying to do, is modify our loan. But at the time, it was the subprime crisis going on.
Yes.
And we didn't have a subprime loan. So the banks were only dealing with subprime loans at that time. They were only modifying those loans. I learned so much very quickly. And I thought, you know, this is information that I can write about and share, because there was a lot of stigma around foreclosure at the time. Like, nobody wanted to admit that they were facing that.
Sure.
It was very much a whispered thing. Like,
yeah,
I would meet people
thing,
at a party, and because I'm so open, I would say, like, yeah, things are really hard. We're, like, facing foreclosure. And someone would be like, oh my, and pull me aside and talk to me privately about their financial problems, because there's just so much shame around the subject. So I started to write about it from that point of view, and also the point of view that Bob, my husband, and I had adopted, which is that we were going to use this experience as a learning experience and try to grow from it and not let it destroy us. That's what we did, and that's what I was writing about in Love in the Time of Foreclosure, and I was very open about our experience and trying to provide information. And it was really incredible, because that ended up building a community with other people who were going through the same thing, and they would write to me, and, you know, we would try to help each other out, and people would share their stories then about, like, we went through this 2 years ago, and things are so much better now, and it was an incredible experience, and I'm very lucky to have a husband who was okay with me completely divulging all of our, you know, the stuff going on in our lives and how hard it was for us personally and emotionally, too.
Nice. You can find more on this one and others. Is this then StephanieAllisonWalker.com?
Yes.
Okay.
And there's also LoveInTheTimeOfForeclosure.com. I think has all of the, everything's there. You can go back through and read the, I don't know why anybody would want to, but you could go. I mean, it's not just, like, I had friends who didn't want to read the blog because they're like, I'm not facing foreclosure. But it's really more about any kind of adversity or very difficult situation and how to get through it without completely losing yourself.
And even if one is not going through foreclosure oneself, we know somebody who is or was or may be about to.
Yes, yeah. That's a great point. It does help to understand what your people are going through in your life.
One other that I want to ask about, because it was inspired by an actual experience with you. You once saw your dad rescue your brother who fell through the ice in the Fox River. Does that take us to Appleton, Wisconsin now?
No, that's McHenry, Illinois, northwest suburbs of Chicago.
Oh, okay. Same river then.
Yeah, actually, Carrie, yes, I did witness that. My dad was in ice skates, and he ran onto the ice, and he's 6'1", and his legs were plunging through the river, through the ice, and he scooped my brother up and then ran in his ice skates all the way up the hill to the house and threw my brother in a bathtub.
Wow.
I did. It's so funny that you read that inspired a short 10-minute play that I wrote called An Average Man.
Is that the one that ended up at Actors Theater of Louisville?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's why it caught my eye, because I did a short stint there as well. Can people still order your plays and perform them? Can they, instead of going to Samuel French, go to StephanieAllisonWalker.com?
Absolutely. My plays, well, most of them are on this website, which is this amazing new website called the New Play Exchange, but it's mostly for theater practitioners. And I think a lot of universities are using it now to find plays for their students. So they're basically playwrights. You know, I'm a member on the site. I have a page, have all my plays posted, and then people can search on the website for types of plays they're looking for and types of roles they're looking for. It's a wonderful resource. I encourage any playwright to be on there because I've gotten productions from that. But as far as I have a few plays that get done a lot because they're published.
Okay.
And so people, not with Samuel French, but those people tend to find there's a website called 10minuteplays.com, and I have a few on there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Common for the people in their directing to project or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And then also I have some plays in a few anthologies published by Smith and Krause.
Nice. That's Stephanie Walker, along with Randy Trabitz. We're speaking primarily about Friends with Guns, a quite timely play running in North Hollywood through May 4th. More at roadtheater.org. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Online at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Back then to Friends with Guns. Is this the type of play where you've got a Q&A, a small focus group discussion going on afterwards?
We have set up a few talkbacks.
Okay.
And I think the dates are still wiggling around, but they're looking at Sunday afternoons. And we're really very interested to hear the audience reaction. Not so much in terms of, here's my critique of your play.
You'll get that.
Yeah. Working really hard to avoid that. But more in terms of where you were left and what you're thinking about now and where did the play hit you. So I think over the previews that we've had, we've been having those informally because people that come to previews are a strange kind of theatrical masochist and they like to talk afterwards, you know, and find out what's changing and what went wrong. And there have been a number of changes through the previews. We're feeling pretty excited given the reactions that we've been hearing from people.
Last week, I went to a town hall on gun violence in LA. It was really fascinating. They had assembled the chief of police, some detectives who work in the gun unit, as well as an anthropologist who studies gun violence, a gun shop owner or manager, somebody who works in a gun store. That was really the only person that was necessarily on the other side of the aisle. Somebody with the Brady, they don't call it the Brady Bill anymore. I think it's the Brady Campaign. Homeboy Industries was another one. Really powerful conversation. So addressing the subject as is gun violence a health issue? Because that would change a lot of things if it were addressed that way in terms of research and providing funding for research in the way that diseases are researched, which gun violence has not. So they also had a trauma surgeon at this town hall, and it was a really fascinating conversation. And it wasn't just all the usual things you're used to hearing from one side of the issue. You know, this anthropologist, she said, I'm going to go rogue. And she suggested that perhaps it might be useful if Democrats or liberals were to join the NRA and try to change it from within.
True.
You know, things like that. It was a very provocative conversation, and it was also extremely impactful because there were a lot of people there who had lost family members to gun violence. So I mention all of this because there were so many people that I thought, oh, it would be so great if they came and saw the play or brought groups and we could have a discussion afterwards and just talk about the issues and how they see the play. And we can, you know, just continue the conversation, because that's really what we hope for the show, is that it inspires conversations that people aren't having. And they will be uncomfortable because it doesn't tell you how to feel or think about the issue.
As a matter of fact, we were speaking before this conversation that this is a bit open-ended in that the play is not designed, nor is it directed, to make you feel one way or the other. Yes, guns are fine. No, guns are not assault rifle. You know, it doesn't tell you how to feel. Let's just leave it at that. That part is open-ended, right?
The play does not tell you how to feel.
Okay.
The play does present lots of arguments about the issue. And ultimately, the play is raising questions that are less about the issue about gun control than they are about the issue of how you can navigate your life in terms of your relationships when you are on the other side of an issue.
Mm. The nice thing is you didn't say about gun issues, because that's, again, that comes back to this play. Guns are the subject of this particular conversation, but the play is not so much, again, not so much about guns as it is one person feels one way, another person feels another way.
When you're looking at a work and you're looking for what's the universal or what is the metaphor, the play is absolutely about guns. I sit and watch the play and I go, oh, this is like the abortion issue. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is like all these political issues that have become so polarizing that we can't even have conversations. And I can translate the guns in my mind as a metaphor to a whole list of things that we can no longer talk about with people that don't agree with us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm finding the play just keeps opening up. I've probably seen it even more than Stephanie has, you know?
Okay, okay.
So I'm sure on first glance, you know, our audience will be talking about guns, as they should and is appropriate. We've already had people coming back, even in just three previews.
Mm.
I've had some people come and see it twice.
Oh, wow.
And tell me, I'm seeing so many other things and now I'm thinking about this. And, you know, it just keeps unfolding.
Let me ask about some of those previews again, some of the Q&A or discussion that followed. I'd love to hear something that you learned from these previews that has already been adapted to the performance.
Kind of a host of things. I mean, down to people that have guns telling us specifics about this wouldn't be called this or this wouldn't hold, you know, like people that are experts on things that we thought we had done our due diligence, but there's more information that people are happy to share. And I think we expect there are people that will be very distressed that the play doesn't strongly support their politics.
On both sides, I would imagine.
I hope we get that audience.
Yeah, hope so.
You know, I mean, it's Los Angeles and it's theater, so we tend to get an audience that's politically more on the liberal side.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But I hope we get both sides, because I'd love to hear from gun owners how they feel about this. Some people have revealed that they are gun owners, and we didn't know that they were, which is fascinating.
Closet admission.
Yeah, like it's, well, I didn't want you to know, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, very happily for me, are leaving the audience full of anxiety, trying to just have a long conversation on their way home and figure out how they feel. And what I'm most happy about, which is a big step from the workshop, is people are not fixated on what happens next. They're understanding that the play is opening up a conversation as opposed to delivering them a message,
nice.
Which is great.
Yes.
Yeah, and
yes.
I've heard different things. Like some people come away from the play and they're talking to me about the marriage and how that resonates for them, or the relationship between the women as a mother and what that's like, and that's what they're left with and appreciating and talking about the play. I think that there are aspects that are uncomfortable and disturbing,
sure,
or all of that that's there too. Whatever the person's like role is, that's what they're talking about. Or a friend who said, you know, I think the play is more about anything that can divide a marriage, not necessarily guns.
Gotcha.
And it's really interesting, and it makes me happy to hear all of that, because I knew if I was going to write this play that I could not judge any of the characters in the play.
Mm.
And I had to get myself to a place, because I didn't want to write that play. I didn't want to write the play that judges the gun owners, because we already know that. We've already seen that play. We've already read a million Facebook arguments.
Yeah.
And especially the theater-going audiences. Like, I don't see any value in patting ourselves on the back for having the quote-unquote right point of view or correct point of view. I don't see the value in that personally as an audience member and definitely not as a playwright. To me, I'm not interested in that. That's boring. I don't want to do that. That's not what I do. I write character-driven plays. I generally write from a female point of view, well, always from a female point of view. And this play wasn't going to be any different. I knew that to write this play, I could not judge them. I had to humanize them and humanize the issue. And it had to be more about these people than the issue itself, because that's not the type of writer that I am. Anyway, I feel like if anybody is hoping that the play reinforces their point of view, it's actually designed to not do that for either side of the issue. It's designed to challenge the audience to stand in the other side and see something they've never been willing to see before. Like, set something down and look and just see. And that's really the challenge of the play. That was a challenge for me in writing it. And that's what I really hope our audience is willing to engage in while watching it.
You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR, also at kvcrnews.org. The sole focus of tonight's KVCR is a new play, Friends with Guns, currently running at the Road Theater in North Hollywood. And David Fleming in conversation with Stephanie Walker, playwright, and Randy Trabitz, director. You brought this up just a second ago. The play looks at gun ownership not only through a liberal lens, but also a female lens. How is this presented, I guess, first, let's just go easily, as a writer, and then how, as a director, do you drive that home?
It's always important to me to show women as we are, not as some ideal or expectation. Mm-hmm. And I like to actually do away with all of those expectations. I just want to show people as real and true, authentic people, and that includes women. And I feel like oftentimes women are not shown that way on stage, and women aren't allowed to be complex in plays and film. Like, we have to always see women in a particular way. If they're unlikable, you hear that a lot. I heard that a lot when I was first writing plays. Your lead character, who is a woman, is so unlikable. It really bothered me. And I'm a pleaser. I am inherently a people pleaser. So I would try really hard to make my characters likable until I got to a certain point. And I'm like, what am I doing? This is not what I want to do. I want to write real people. These women are real. They're mothers. There are a lot of things about motherhood that are also idealized in the world, and you don't often see mothers as we really are. We're just real people. We swear. We're people. Yeah. So it came that way. And beyond that, I did a lot of research for the play on women and guns. And there's this whole area that I never even would have imagined either of feminism and guns, and this idea that true feminism is allowing women to have choices about everything in their life, including how we protect ourselves.
Absolutely.
And if that choice is to carry a gun, then that's what she chooses. And it was this whole area that I didn't know anything about. I did a lot of research on that, and also how women try to feel powerful in the world, walking through life as a woman. I was interested in that idea.
Can I add something to that?
Yes, please. I would appreciate
just it. Just in terms of the process, when I read the play and started working on it, I thought a lot about safety, and I thought a lot about safety on all the levels, not just in terms of the actors in the room being safe to dig deep enough emotionally to create these things, but also the characters' concern with safety and very much how women are concerned with safety as opposed to how men are concerned with safety and how to keep your children safe. All of these things fugue through the play consistently. So it was very important to me to start the rehearsal process by creating a safe room. We spent a lot of time doing intimacy training so that the actors were in a place that they could gradually build relationships, then they could trust, that then they could dig into, that then they could have trouble with, given the narrative of the play. And I think that was important. Another really fantastic piece of research that I did is that the actresses and I went to a shooting range.
Yes.
Which was quite something.
Who had not shot before?
Me. Before I wrote the play, I never had.
Yeah. I never had, certainly. In fact, not to get too anecdotal, but when I lived in New York in the wild 80s, and we used to deal with the danger on the street by just keeping track and come home at night when I had female roommates, come home at night and tell each other, 16, you know, 14.
How many what shots was the, you heard out there?
Not shots, or? But how many encounters? How many, like...
Oh, my. Oh.
Like sexual, usually, encounters or right. grabs okay. or that kind of thing. But I did at one point have a boyfriend who got mugged, and when I picked up his coat the next night and a gun fell out, I went upstairs and packed and moved that night. So that's as close as I had gotten to a real gun before going to the shooting range.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a big day.
Stephanie, I know that you said it was all very scary for you and extremely eye-opening. When you fired a gun for the first time, I don't know what you fired, but I'm sure that when you picked it up, it was either a lot heavier than you thought it'd be, or it was a lot lighter. It kicked. I almost hit my chin. What were some of the things that you discovered?
It was heavier than I expected. Then flames came out.
Yeah.
And that really surprised me. I don't know why I wasn't expecting flames, you know. I hadn't really thought this through. And the other thing that surprised me is that I was a really good shot. I had several bullseyes. Mm-hmm. And I liked being good at it.
It you felt know? Good, didn't
I like I'm like, I I'm good at this and I like being good at things. So I actually had fun. And that was a surprise to me that it was fun. I went in like, you know, I was just observing my own reactions because as a writer, this was part of my research.
Oh, yeah.
So it was very easy to kind of separate myself from the experience and just observe it and observe my reactions. Like, oh, isn't that interesting? Or I thought I would be more filled with fear in this moment than I actually am. And, you know, that sort of thing. But the very first time I went to a shooting range, there was an ammunition sale that day, and there were people stockpiling ammo. So it was very weird for me to see that because this was a whole new world for me. And the NRA was there to sign people up, and I was like, what's happening? And then the people that I met who had come to the range with their bags of guns, you know, we had conversations. They love talking about shooting and their guns and you know, one guy was like Cornell grad, told me all of, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, I went to Cornell. I just love shooting guns. I do it on the weekends. Kids with their dads. There was a couple that looked like they were on a date. And she was wearing like stiletto thigh high boots. And I was like, it was really across the board. My eyes were opened. Like this has been, I've always thought like only one type of person goes to a shooting range. But I was so incredibly naive. I just didn't have any interest in learning anything about it.
That's really cool because it helped you get rid of the stereotypes and you were trying hard to keep that within your writing to, if you want to go with familiar tropes, a woman a certain way, a guy a certain way, a less liberal person. So, Randy, you know, the words were already there. So I'm curious, you know, it would have been easy to maybe, oh gosh, make the gun owner come off as maybe more closed-minded no matter what the words were. You can still have that person presented a certain way. Is that something that we can even discuss, how you would make sure that somebody is presented in a non-stereotypical way?
Well, the words were incredibly instructional in okay. that regard. There were a couple of things that we talked about, certainly in terms of the casting. Because we had done the workshop together, Stephanie and I talked at length about casting, not just looking for the best actors that we could find, but also wanting to represent what Los Angeles looks like now. And we were really quite intent on having a multi-ethnic cast, which can be tricky when you're doing a company show, as this is. We were restricted to the members of this theater. But we got very fortunate. Because that in and of itself tells a story you don't expect. When you see people of color in these roles,
right.
It changes things. And it changed moments and it changed dialogue. And the production and the writer have been very open to having those conversations, which has, I think, only enhanced the whole production, the whole effect of it.
Nice. That's Randy Trabitz along with Stephanie Walker. We're speaking primarily about Friends with Guns, running in North Hollywood through May 4th. More at roadtheater.org. I'm David Fleming. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR, online at kvcrnews.org. You know, often for a director, the most awkward experience or difficult experience may be having the writer in the same room as what you're trying to direct.
Yeah.
So, and now having the writer in the same room as this interview, I would love to hear if you did lead something a certain direction and Stephanie actually corrected you. Maybe, no, this is the intent. Or Stephanie, if you stayed back enough to say, oh, well, this is where my words could go. How was that handled?
With great respect And I think a mutual goal, mm-hmm. which is to tell the story. I have a certain amount of experience with working with playwrights that are alive. And, you know, when it gets to be too much, you go, I'm going to do Sophocles now because I can do whatever I want. But I don't have a gigantic ego. I think my job is to tell the story of the play. I am in service to the play, and it is my job to direct the actors to tell the story of the play. So I'm a big believer in communication, and I take notes from writers very well. I don't always take notes from other people very well. But I feel like nobody is closer to the story than the person who created it, and it's my job to listen to that. And I think we got into a pretty good clip of if I had a question, I would show her as opposed to trying to have the conversation and describe it. I have the advantage of having actors and working the scene and saying, here's what we're working on. Can I show you this? Then hearing her response. There have been changes to the script, even yesterday, which I think is great. That's part of the joy of watching the birth of a new play.
Sure. Sure.
I've loved working with Randy. She's really, I've said, and I don't know if I've said this to your face, but the only reason I'm standing right now is because of you.
Aww.
Because I had a very, very luckily, happily busy February. We had a production of Friends with Guns in Portland, Oregon, and I was there for that. But before that, I was in Chicago for the first week of a rehearsal for a new play in Chicago, and then back to Chicago. And it's just been a lot. And I'm a mom. I have two kids and I have a husband. And so I knew that I did not have to worry about anything because Randy and I were such on the same page. And she's such a strong director and so good with actors. I mean, there was not a single worry at all. And I'm a worrier.
Mm.
So that says a lot.
Yeah.
It's been so great. Like, I have spent more time with everybody in the process since we started getting into previews. And it's been really great. But they were on their own a lot more than usual when I have a new play going up. It's such a benefit to be in the same city and for me to be here and be able to come to a rehearsal one day if there is something Randy wants to show me or whatever. But it's been a wonderful process, and we have such great actors, too.
Nice. This may be a restating. It probably is. Because in a way, we keep on coming back to this. Even though this is Friends with Guns, this is easily Friends with a Conversation. This is friends who listen or maybe don't. Both Randy and Stephanie keep talking about how the play really asks the audience whether or not they're capable of listening. Stephanie, you said that it's your belief that without listening, the conversation will never advance. And the kicker on that, and that is true for all sides of this issue.
Yes. I mean, I agree with everything you just said. I think if we don't relearn how to have a conversation, if we don't teach each other, teach our children how to compromise and negotiate and really have a conversation, we are doomed. I mean, I can be very fatalistic, but I could say America was a nice little experiment that didn't work out when you look at, I teach history too. So when I look at older civilizations, it's like, this is the point where we collapse, you know, when there is such gridlock, when there is such partisanship, and there is such an inability, even inside, as the play shows us, an intimate relationship between two people who love each other, find themselves unable to communicate and negotiate and compromise and listen. We're in trouble. This is a wake-up call.
Riffing off of what you said, when everything is so fear-driven, especially inside of the relationship, when it's the fears that's driving every moment and all that's happening is reacting to everything from a place of fear.
Right.
And I like to say that the gun in this play is a catalyst for all the stuff that is underneath, and that one of the things that I was really hoping to explore is what is underneath the gun issue, because I'm not naive enough to think that I'm going to write a play and find some kind of answer. No, this is a big issue. You know, I used to be somebody who was take them all away, take them all away, get rid of them. We don't need them. Just get rid of them all.
Mm-hmm.
And in writing the play and all of my research and everything, I really realized like there are just so many. I don't know how you would do that. And if there are so many and if they're never going away, then what can we do? I don't know. I don't have an answer. But one thing that I do think is important in everything, in every area of life, is when you're having a really strong reaction to something, anything, it's important to look at what's underneath that. And so that was important to me in writing the play. In writing the play, I was looking at what's underneath this issue, and what a lot of it is just if we're looking at violence and we're unwilling to deal with our own personal capacity for violence in every day, you know, even just driving in our cars, somebody cutting us off or something, and then the rage that comes up, and that we feel so protected to scream and yell at a complete stranger for cutting us off. And just, you know, there's just so much rage that's bubbling right under the surface. And I think that we're so unwilling to own it in ourselves and point fingers at, you know, that person, they're the ones that with the real problem, you know. To me, that's just not useful. Like I said before, it doesn't forward anything. So I'm hoping that it will leave people looking at what's underneath and what we can own in ourselves and what we can bring into the world. And even just in conversation, like violence in the way we speak to each other on the street, on Facebook, in our daily lives.
I couldn't write a better closer. So before we wrap, we've been talking about a lot of issue-driven material, a lot of things that could be taken as a lecture or being preachy. Can we dispel this right away? We said dark comedy close to an hour ago and then haven't touched that again since.
Thank you. I would love to dispel this. I hang my hat on the fact that I think the play is relentlessly entertaining. It's beautifully designed, and I couldn't be more proud of the ensemble of actors. But these are scenes that are engaging, and the play carries you, and the audience has been so far loudly vocal with laughter and gasps throughout. So there's every reason to come and not expect it to be a lecture.
Somebody last night told me they were on the edge of their seat the whole time.
Oh, wow. Nice. Nice. Yeah. It's a heavy, heavy subject, but still very entertaining.
It's dramatized, okay. And there's a lot of drama. We've had people scream out. The guy scream? Oh, no! You know? Yeah. Clearly. And so that's very exciting when that happens.
I just need to say at this point, Stephanie and Randy, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate knowing about this, and I'm glad to help get the word out about this. This not only is an important issue, but it's also looks like good entertainment at the same time. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Once again, Friends with Guns. That's at the Rode Theater in North Hollywood running through May 4th. More at rodetheater.org. We had with us tonight playwright Stephanie Walker and director Randy Trabitz. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Stephanie and Randy, and here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Shireen Awad, Taylor Milliner, and KVCR General Manager Keith Bergfeld. Music beds and themes heard on KVCR's composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVCR's programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.